Digital content on WAER is supported by Hunter Springs Landscape Artisans, helping clients throughout the Central New York community create their own unique outdoor living space for 37 years. Services and project galleries found at hunterspringslandscape.com.
Sports is a deeply rooted part of popular culture in countries all around the world. From big games like the Super Bowl to tournaments like the NCAA Final Four, sports has a way of bringing us together and creating new tribes, like few things in our culture. From post-game pizza outings in Little League Baseball to grabbing a brew with your friends at a neighborhood sports bar, sports is a popular backdrop for human connection, bonding, and community building.
We're down to 15 seconds to play. Chalmers has made big shots in his career. Chalmers swings it. James, a three. No good. Rebound. Bosch has got it. Clears. Allen fired. Oh, Ray Allen. He drills it. We are tied at 95. 5 seconds to go.
That's all changing in the face of COVID-19. Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee, here to discuss what it all means for the sports that we love and how it impacts the fan experience is legendary, award-winning sports broadcaster Ian Eagle, WAER and Syracuse University alumnus and good friend. Welcome to Pop Life, Ian Berg.
Joe, my pleasure. Great to be on with you.
You've reached the big time. This is the pinnacle of your career, being on Pop Life.
When I, as a child, dreamed of all the things that I might achieve, my parents said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I want to be on Pop Life, Mom and Dad." That's the goal, and now I get to realize it. Thank you, Joe.
So you are currently in the NBA bubble. So what's that experience like?
It's been interesting. I'm part of almost like the diet bubble, auxiliary bubble. There are different zones here with the NBA. So the players, the coaches, officials, staff members are in a green zone, and they're located on one of three Disney properties. Mm-hmm. And now that they've all cleared quarantine, they can mix among one another, and there can be interaction. I am in the yellow zone, which is a hotel about 10 minutes outside of the venue. And yes, we are tested twice a week. We are not permitted to integrate with anybody in the green zone. So during my stay here in the bubble, I will not see a player. I will not see a coach. I will not have any interaction with a staff member or official. I can just be around people in the yellow zone. And even that is very limited. They do not want you to have dinner. They don't want you to congregate. So basically, Joe, I was built for this. I prep, I take a walk, I eat, I stream some videos, and then I rinse, and then I repeat. Uh-huh. That has been my routine.
Wow. So, but you still have access to players and coaches just when you get to their particular bubble. I mean, how do you, normally you guys are doing pregame prep, you're meeting mm-hmm. with players and coaches, getting ready for the broadcast, gathering all your information. Is that stuff still going on?
No, it is not. The only access we have is via Zoom or via whatever social virtual connection that we all have. So we did two coaches interviews prior to our first game, New Orleans against Utah. We had Alvin Gentry on the phone on a conference call. We had Quinn Snyder on a Zoom, and each team will choose which vehicle they want to use. To be honest, Joe, we don't have a production meeting. We do it via some kind of virtual social connection. It's very different. Mm-hmm. Wear a mask going up to our broadcast area. Our area is separated by plexiglass. So my partner and I are next to one another, but there is a large, thick plexiglass between us. I wore cologne for the first broadcast. I have no idea why. Who would benefit from my odor? Nobody. So I think I miscalculated bringing the cologne down to Orlando.
So, I mean, you know, what experts are saying that even if a, or even when, I should say, a, you know, a something is developed to deal with COVID, that it may be for that particular strain. This is yep. going to be with us probably for quite a while. Do you see this as the new path forward in your industry? This kind of, maybe not to this degree, but this kind of special treatment when you are engaging?
I do. I think for the foreseeable future, there are going to be a lot of regulations on how we set up a broadcast area, where we broadcast from. I'm one of only four play-by-play announcers that are currently in Orlando for this stage of the season. Mm-hmm. And then all the play-by-play announcers around the NBA, television and radio on a local level are doing it from a studio mm-hmm. or from their home arena. And they're setting it up as if they were doing a normal game, but they're calling it off a monitor. I did a few of those before I made my way down to Orlando with the Brooklyn Nets. And of course, it's not the same. It's right. detached. Mm-hmm. You're missing out on the nuance. Mm-hmm. And even in the arena, Joe, I'm not courtside. We're about 15 rows up. And not only plexiglass between me and my broadcast partner, plexiglass in front of me.
Wow.
They are not taking any chances. They are leaving no stones unturned. The NBA has been incredibly vigilant and respectful of the players and coaches and staff members' safety. And when the league announced their plan, I think there was skepticism. Mm-hmm. They made their initial announcement in May. And at that point, what was happening in our country, a lot of people thought, well, that's an overreaction. And the reality is here we are today, and it's not. It's very appropriate, and they have by far been ahead of the curve in doing everything possible mm-hmm. to make sure that the players are in a safe and healthy environment.
Let's talk for a second about that fan experience or the lack of fans in the stands with the broadcast. As a broadcaster, do you feel more pressure to bring something more yeah. to the game? As a broadcaster, do you feed off of fan reaction?
Sure, I do. Fans are normally the compass that you use as a play-by-play announcer, when to ratchet up your call, when to pull back on television, when you get great reaction shots and pictures and this cascade of fans applauding. That's often a sign for you to just stop talking. Let the pictures mm-hmm. tell the story. Let the sounds tell the story. I have an advantage maybe that some others did not have, and I look at it threefold. One, I've called a number of games from a remote location, and big games, NBA Finals for the World Feed. I've done FIBA World Basketball Championships. I've done tennis events, golf events, not being at the event, either being in a studio or being in a trailer. So I had a gauge of what the energy level had to be. Two, I've been the voice of video games for a number of years. And you think, well, what's the connection there? Well, you're in a sterile environment. You have to visualize what it is that you're calling. And then you have to find the right energy level and do it over and over again. I did it for Sony PlayStation, PSP. I did a game in recent years called NBA Playgrounds. And you have to generate all the juice. And then the third advantage that I would say I've had is, Joe, I called New Jersey Nets games in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. There were not many fans there.
Whoa, that's great experience.
Excellent real life reps that I got early in my broadcast career with the NBA.
That is great experience. Many companies see work from home as a reality going forward, even after a vaccine is developed. Yeah. It's the new way of doing business. Do you think this is going to redefine broadcasting, at least sports broadcasting? You think there will be more of the remote broadcast in your future?
Yeah, Joe, I think it is going to certainly streamline things. We've seen more of a skeleton staff for a lot of these live events. CBS has been doing golf, and they've been doing it quite well, week in and week out. I think to viewers, it feels like the normal broadcast. But they're doing it with less people in the truck, less people out on the course covering it, less tape operators, less audio people, less announcers on site. And I think the other part too, which is really an interesting conversation, I think based on so many of the circumstances that we've faced, our normal standard has been lowered. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. It's just par for the course. What used to be considered acceptable on radio and television, we've now lowered the bar. I know for you, Joe, you've been in this business a long time. Things, your ear is finely tuned. And if you heard something that wasn't correct under normal circumstances, you might pick up the phone and say, hey, what are we doing here? That's got to be better. And now you might say, okay, I get it. We're doing it remotely, or we couldn't get the best sound.
The videos are freezing up.
So now a little messy. Your kid is running in the background. Your dog just jumped in front of the shot. You have something on your face. Everything has changed. So how long this lasts, I think the audience has accepted it. But what I've noticed, even coming back for the NBA, it's muscle memory. And people do have a certain expectation that comes with the coverage. And I think why the NBA on opening night was so successful is that they made it look and they made it sound like a normal NBA game. It didn't feel that unfamiliar. And the fact is, with the NBA, Joe, fans are as not a big a part of the whole equation as it might be for baseball. Your main shot as a television director for baseball is the center field camera. And what are you showing? You're showing the pitcher, you're showing the batter, the catcher, the umpire, and the fans behind them. It's been ingrained in your brain to see fans, to see some kind of action behind the action of the game.
Same now, thing for football too.
Football, yes, that you would see. Basketball, other than the back of heads in the front row and maybe a few faces here and there. I think what the NBA has done, they've tightened it up a bit and they've provided a track, a soundtrack that makes you comfortable. I was up in the air as to how I felt when it was announced that there might be fake crowd noise used, because my initial instinct was, hey, we should not be misleading the audience. We should not be pumping in something artificial. Our job is still to report, and our job is to be accurate. But when you've heard some of the sporting events that were completely flat and uncomfortable for the viewer or listener, it did flip a switch in my head that maybe we do need to address it. So
I'm a little.
I've seen the NBA do what I thought was a highly credible job in their presentation.
Yeah, I'm a little used to it because I'm a Premier League soccer fan. That's one of the first sports that I was able to watch live after during COVID, and they were pumping in sound, and I enjoyed it. I will say, from a fan's perspective, last night watching the Lakers and Clippers, the energy between the two teams. It almost felt like a playoff atmosphere. The excellent announcing from Kevin Harlan. It didn't detract. I didn't miss the fan and the piped in audio. I didn't miss much. I watched that game from beginning to end with the same energy and excitement all the way through. That's my perspective. What are the players and coaches saying?
Yeah, we've had a chance to talk to some, and I think what I've noticed is a sense of professional pride that has kicked in. Did you end up watching Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary at all?
I saw a few episodes, not the entire,
So one of the episodes, early on, they showed a heated scrimmage of the Dream Team. There were no fans in attendance. It was in a closed gym. And it was this incredible footage of Charles Barkley going against Karl Malone and David Robinson and Jordan and Magic talking smack. And that is what struck me in my preparation for this NBA restart and then for the reality of watching it both remotely and now in person. Mm-hmm. It's professional pride. Mm-hmm. When the ball is tossed in the air and you're counting the points, you're keeping score, most of the players realize that this counts.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, when they decide who won and who lost, it's going to mean something to them. So the intensity level to me was very high. Mm-hmm. What you did catch was more communication between the players and coaches because they could really hear one another and players on the bench pumping up their teammates after a big play. Yeah. And normally we would see that. We would see bench celebrations. But the difference was you could actually hear some of it.
Right.
And I think that's going to bond these guys together. Look, every team is saying the same thing, Joe. When asked about the experience, coaches, players are saying, yeah, we're really close and we're doing all this stuff together and we're eating all our meals together and we're going bowling, we're going fishing, we're hanging out. All of that is great.
My colors on and the flags waving. And now all of that sort of goes away. I mean, what's the question here is are you hearing conversations from sport ownership, from league managers about how to create a new fan experience going forward?
Joe, as you well know, it's visceral. But it's something that you can feel in your bones, and you can't simulate that. It's still exciting. You watch the Lakers and the Clippers. You were into it. You were engaged. You were reacting. Maybe you were even emoting at times when LeBron makes a huge play and you pop out of your seat for a moment. Mm-hmm. But it's still not the same.
Right. I got no one to high five.
Yeah, there's not. You can virtual high five. Yeah. You could send your friend a text. You could check in with your daughter. You can still have moments and shared moments, but it's not the same. There's no embrace. There's no look. There's no nod of affirmation that you get from being at a live sporting event. The NBA has created this virtual fan experience, and you know it was cool. I thought the fact that you had fans there in some way, shape, or form brought a little something to the table, but it's not going to replace it.
Right.
There's no way to do that. The owners are concerned, and rightfully so, financially, first and foremost. And how do you develop new fans?
Right.
Well, you develop them through everything that you just laid out. Mm-hmm. The feeling of being a part of something, the feeling of commonality. And no matter how different you might be as people, for this team and this game and this moment, you come together and you rejoice because you have that shared experience. Mm-hmm. I think most people are just happy that it's back in some form. And then eventually the other part has to fill the void.
Right.
And the hope is, whether it is a virus, whether it is a vaccine that finally comes and saves the day, I don't think it's going to be as simple as just that happening. It's still going to take a long time. If anything, you'll see owners maybe accepting half capacity, a third capacity. It's going to be a buildup.
Yeah, and I can't imagine everyone being comfortable going back into that environment from a fan's perspective.
Understandably.
So I wonder, you know, what new methods of access there will be for fans. I'm thinking of, paywall streaming through the team's website. Maybe there is something in movie theaters where you can manage the capacity. Maybe there's something in with drive-through. Drive-in theaters. I don't know. Yep. I'm just trying to think of how we move forward, giving as many fans access as much as possible beyond, the television broadcast are great, but they're you're only going to have one game in the market or whatever market's close to you. Maybe you can get the NFL ticket, but it seems like other methods of access have to be developed if you want to capture that revenue and give your fans access to the team.
Yeah, I think you're going down the right path, and I think that's what many marketing people within the individual leagues are trying to sort out. What we've seen, I'd say, over the last 5 years, more accelerated, but we did see it 7 to 10 years ago. A lot of teams have brought a lot of the production in-house, and they tell their fans, we can get you closer to the action. Mm-hmm. Even more so than the networks or the affiliates or the websites. You come to us. You're a Steelers fan. You come to Steelers.com, and we're going to have the latest news. We're going to have one-on-one interviews. We're going to have all access behind-the-scenes footage that you can't get anywhere else. I will imagine that that's what teams will look to do. But, you know, based on the circumstances currently, within the confines of these different buildings around the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the NHL, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're just not at a point where we could even consider doing that. That's in the future. And right now their goal is to just get the games going and provide fans with entertainment and something that can fill that empty space.
Before I let you go, one last question. Presumably, you'll be covering NFL for CBS.
Yes.
What are you guys talking about? How will that move forward? Not only the broadcast, but is there any idea of what the stadium experience is going to be like?
Very fluid right now. I think the NFL is working through a lot of different possibilities, Joe. They had the benefit of time, unlike any other sport. Mm-hmm. All of this happened very early in their offseason, and they continued business as usual. NFL draft was different, more intimate. It was not the big event that they normally put on with 100,000 people in the streets of whatever city they've chosen that year, Nashville or Philadelphia or Chicago. And I actually liked it. I thought it really came across well. It gave us a taste. Mm-hmm. Behind the scenes of the players that were realizing a dream and their families. And then we got to see decision makers and coaches and their families. It was really cool. And it might be something that they consider moving forward as the standard in which they do that particular event. But with that said, here we are. Mm-hmm. And we're hitting August.
Right.
And the clock has accelerated. It's ticking. And right now, we still don't exactly know what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. I think the NFL's hope was that by the time they hit September, things around the country would be better and we would be back to quasi-normal.
Right.
We're not.
And we're dealing with multiple states that have varying degrees of impact and how they're infection rates. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but times are changing, and we're along for the ride, and we'll see how it does. But Ian, I want to thank you very much for classing up Pop Life for me. I appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you, man. When's your next game?
I've got Nets and Wizards on Sunday, and then Portland and Houston on Tuesday night.
Okay, well, best of luck. I'll be tuning in.
Man, it's great to be back. It was very different, very unique being there in person and not having the stimuli that you're accustomed to, but it still was the NBA, and I felt that, and hopefully the fans enjoyed it. To me, the NBA knows what they're doing. They know how to put on an event, and that's how they're treating this.
Honestly, I think we're so thirsty, we take some little leaguers on
this. Right, pick up basketball down at the Y.
I think so. Hey, man, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, Joe, love talking to you. We'll do it again.
Thank you.
Thanks for checking out another episode of Pop Life. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and please rate the show to help us reach more folks. Pop Life is a product of WAER, Syracuse Public Media. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. I'm Joe Lee. We'll see you next time.